As we said this morning in church, today is a day of mourning, and that is why our Holy Church has appointed a fast for it, because fasting is bound up with mourning. A person who mourns for something fasts, as both Wednesday and Friday teach us so beautifully. On Wednesday we fast because our Lord was betrayed and sold, and on Friday because he was crucified. Both of these days are days of mourning. So tonight I would like to speak about a much misunderstood institution, one that John the Forerunner above all lived and preached, and it goes by the name of fasting. Sadly, this institution has been so misunderstood that we wait for the doctor to prescribe our fasting to us as a diet, rather than for Christ to give it to us as a virtue. That is what we have come to. If the doctor says no, the doctor is obeyed, both for ourselves and for those who depend on us, for our children, for everyone. But when Christ says it, Christ is not obeyed. Many people, in order to fast, make a vow. This morning, when someone heard that because today is Saturday a person is permitted to use oil, it became a problem for one lady. She said, "I have made a vow to fast on this day, just as others have made a vow to fast on Friday, saying it is good for the eyes." If you want to make a vow, and you want your vow to have real content, and you do not want to be saying foolish, laughable things, then you will not vow to fast on the Feast of the Cross, which is already a fast day, and you are already obliged, nor on Friday, which is already a fast day, and you are already obliged. You're killing what's already dead, right? Make a vow to fast on Monday, to fast on Tuesday, to fast on Thursday. Not a vow to fast where you're already required to fast. That's nonsense. And we call ourselves Christians, and we make a great thing of it. We've made a vow to fast on Friday. But Friday is already a fast day in itself. So what have you vowed to fast from? Something you're already obliged to observe. And you want to call that a vow as well, so that you may receive a reward. What kind of thing is that? There are many things that are misunderstood, even though our church has laid them out so beautifully. My dear brothers and sisters, whether we want to learn this or not, let us make every effort to learn how to fast according to our strength. There is an apostolic canon that deposes clergy and excommunicates lay people who fail to fast when there is no illness. Did you know that? If you have never heard it, let me be the first to recite it to you from memory. If any bishop, or presbyter, or deacon, or subdeacon, or reader, or chanter, does not fast on Wednesday, on Friday, and during Great Lent, let him be deposed. He is to be deposed, do you understand? It's not a matter of giving him a week's penance, and if he is a layman, let him be excommunicated, except in the case of illness. If someone is genuinely ill, demonstrably so, then with the help and the opinion of a physician who has discernment, and with your spiritual father, you will relax your fast and eat what your illness requires. Because the aim of fasting is not to kill the body, it is not meant to fill the sanatoriums or the neurological clinics. Its purpose is to put the passions to death, to tear down unlawful beds, to uproot carnal desires from the very beginning, and to destroy those things that ruin the soul. So consider how serious a matter fasting is, when the holy apostles included it in their canons, with the penalty of deposition for clergy and the penalty of excommunication for lay people. Who am I now to correct these things or to set them aside? So this is something serious. I do not know whether this institution has ever occupied your thoughts. Many people imagine that some rusty imagination invented fasting. I even read in a magazine, and I will not tell you who the man was, that he had written that fasting was imposed for commercial reasons as well. That is, so that we would eat the fasting foods, so that the fasting foods would not go to waste. This is absurd. It does not bear saying, "May we have his blessing wherever he is now." Do you understand that is, that we impose a fast so that the olives of Amphissa will sell? What absurd notions, my beloved. If anyone wants to search out the age of fasting, he will have to go into paradise to find it. However many years old the human race is, that is how old fasting is. Do you know what Basil the Great says about fasting? He says fasting was given as law in paradise. That was the first commandment Adam received. From the tree of knowledge you shall not eat. That you shall not eat is fasting, and it was laid down as law. And if Eve had fasted from that tree, we would have no need of this fasting now. We would not need to fast today. If Eve had fasted back then together with Adam, we would not be fasting now. So let us fast now, since they did not fast, so that we may return to paradise. Did he not tell them not even to go near that tree? Do not look at it. Do not cut a branch from it. Do not eat from it. That is a matter of fasting. And in fact, he gave them a very easy fast. He said, from everything except one. If we suppose that this garden paradise had 1,000 trees, you may eat from 999 of them. The 1,000th, no, and Satan managed, through their carelessness, to get them to eat from that one. A matter of fasting was the cause of the expulsion from paradise. Do you understand how serious this commandment is? And yet people get it all backwards. Poor soul, haven't you seen it? Haven't you read where it says that what goes in doesn't harm you? It's what comes out that harms you, and he doesn't even know where it says that. If you tell him, take the gospel and show me where Christ says this, he can't find it. But he knows it by heart, off the top of his head. Satan planted it in his head, and he lives by it and goes around repeating it to everyone. Why did Christ say that? What does it mean that he cannot answer? If anyone wants to look into what I'm telling you, which is also an objection raised by a great many people, he should turn to the 15th chapter of Matthew and find our Christ there at the point where he was accused because his disciples ate with unwashed hands. The whole matter is about unwashed hands. It is not about fasting. They ask Christ, why do they eat and set aside the tradition of the elders? And Christ tells us, the things that go in do not defile a man. If they eat a little dirt, as we say, it will go down into the belly and pass out into the drain. But the things that come out, he says, your own wicked things, you who set out from Jerusalem and came here to find me so you could catch me in a word, these are what defile and pollute a man, and out of the heart, from within come evil thoughts, fornication, adultery, dissension, and on and on. These are the things that defile and pollute a person, not eating with unwashed hands. Even if someone eats dirt, it goes into the stomach and then passes out of the body. Yet people today take it to mean this. Christ said what enters a person does no harm, what comes out does harm. And Christ was not speaking about fasting in this passage. It is we who twist his words. Why? So that we can abolish the institutions that we find inconvenient and indulge our bellies. From the very first days of our church, fasts have been appointed. Some of them are easy and some are hard. That is true, but the Christian receives such grace from Christ that on those days when there is a fast, he forgets the foods that are not permitted. He forgets them, and not only that, the fasting foods actually taste better to him on those days. People haven't tasted it, so they don't know. Christianity is a personal experiment, something each of us has to try out for ourselves. Christianity isn't a theory. It isn't talk about the stars. It's action. I can keep telling you that honey is sweet, but if you don't dip a finger in and put it in your mouth, you'll never know how sweet honey really is. And that is exactly why it was said in advance, 1,000 years before Christ, through David, in the 33rd Psalm, O taste and see that the Lord is good. Try it. Do not stop at the theory. Do not let it go in one ear and out the other. Try it, and you will see how much it is to your benefit. If only a person would keep 2 days of fasting, Wednesday and Friday, which are appointed for you. What could be healthier? What could be healthier than to let your stomach and your pancreas rest from fats and from all these rich things, and you are not being asked to go completely without food, even though the word fasting is interpreted as going without food. It is a compound word from ni and sidia, no food. It means no food, not a change of food. I'm saying eat fruit, eat something lighter, give your body a rest. It is a great thing. The doctors would be out of work if we kept the fast. The diet the doctors put us on is a fast. you will not eat this, you will not eat that, you will not eat this, you will not eat that. Just a little yogurt, is that not a fast? How much can you take away on your own and live rightly without wearing out your strength? So that you do not end up in a sanatorium or in the neurological ward. If you measure things properly, you will be able to keep your health without so many pains, without so many torments, without so many afflictions, because you know there is not a house that does not have one or two or three sick beds in it, and who are we walking around ill on our feet, and this comes from overeating. The first thing the doctor will tell you is, no food, but because the doctor calls it a diet that goes down fine, because Christ says it fasting together with his church, that does not go down, and the man goes on playing clever. Where? Right at the place where he trips and falls. It is not right. So I am saying this is something we too should think through as much as we can, as much as we can. And what is needed is simple food and food taken sparingly. Eat slowly and eat little, both the short of it and the long of it. Do not eat a great deal or many times a day, but eat a little and at infrequent intervals according to the work you do. These matters have been left open. Keep this in mind to the discretion of each person's spiritual father. He must consider the individual, who this person is and what kind of work he does. Is he idle, passing the time with his worry beads and wandering from bench to bench? What is he? What work does he do? Is he a schoolboy who is studying? Another one is at university. Another does manual labor. A woman is nursing her child, and so on. Although these days they do not have children and do not nurse them, but let us include that too. And in proportion to all this, he will use discernment and give his direction. You, yes, you will keep what the church asks. You may be allowed, since God is forgiving, to eat cheese, for example, or to take milk, which is necessary for certain illnesses, for certain ages, for certain constitutions. Others he will even permit to eat fish, and there may come a case of such need that he permits even meat, even on Great Friday. He has that right. But you and I will not take that right for ourselves. You will settle it together with your spiritual father. Because whatever you do outside your spiritual father's direction, remember that he holds the authority to bind and to loose exactly as Christ gave it in his church, and whoever refuses to arrange things in this way will stand guilty before those canons which the church has laid down. Why, for instance, have we come here? What are we doing? Why did we come to this place? Have you thought it through? What is it that we have piled up in our bodies all year long, that we have come here to get rid of, here at this pool of Siloam, here at Erypso? What are these things, toxins, and all the fatty things we eat, never telling the difference between food that is healthy and food that is not? And so we come here and take the baths to get all of it out. Go down and have a look for yourselves. People are eating pork chops they eat, and then they go and take the baths. But we have no shame. That is how foolish we are. And in my own neighborhood yesterday, on a Wednesday, they had lit the charcoal brazier and were grilling. You are Christians. You aren't going to go bathing and grill openly out in the street on a Wednesday, are you? You fear neither God nor man. You fear nothing. They had no sick person in the house. If they had a sick person, let them grill it indoors. If they must, they were out there grilling for half a day. Where is this God of ours going to take us? What ground do we have left to stand on? Everything, anything goes. And even today, there were people with no health reasons at all who broke the fast. In defiance of the day, in defiance of St. John, in defiance of the church. I do not know whether anyone here is from the region of Triphylia. I once went up to speak in a village there with a priest who was with me and who was hearing confessions. And we came to a village called Dara, as I recall. And in the evening when the people gathered, we spoke whatever God gave us light to say in a church they had there, St. George's, if I remember rightly. And I said something about the subject of fasting, because the older people, our farmers, used to fast and still work with the hoe, not with machines, with the hoe. Today they do not fast, and although back then they worked from dark to dark, now they work 6 hours and do not fast. So I spoke a little about fasting, and specifically about the honorable forerunner since it was summer. And at the end a man stands up and says to me, "What you said is true." He said, "It was the dawn of St. John's Day, and I came home at daybreak and told my mother to take some milk and prepare me something to eat. And she said to me, 'My child, today is the feast of St. John. We do not eat milk.' And I blasphemed against St. John and against my mother and against the Most Holy Theotokos. And when my mother heard me start to blaspheme, she said, 'Wait, wait, wait, and I will make it for you.' And she went and milked the goat into a wooden bowl and brought it, he says, to a wooden table we had in the kitchen. That kitchen had reeds across the ceiling above. And at one point, angry as I was, I set the milk down there in front of me, took some bread from a basket, and started crumbling it into the milk. And a snake let itself down from up above, a long one, about 2 meters. Thick, he told me, this thick, and he showed me just how thick it was. And it comes and draws it up, he says. It drew all the milk out of the bowl and took it from me. My blood froze. I stood there rooted. Ask me, he says, whether I ever did such a thing again after that. Now, of course, if we imagine that St. John sends us snakes, or that the Most Holy Theotokos should show us favor, that is not faith. These are exceptional cases, and we ought to take them seriously to heart. God wants a cheerful giver. He wants you to love it yourself, to understand that this is a commandment, and that you must keep it because it is for your own benefit. Not only spiritual, I repeat, but bodily as well. It is to a person's benefit to fast. Unfortunately, I say, this whole thing has been abolished from childhood now. The young men and young women are not taught to fast, and it is only natural that when they grow up and set up their own homes, having no foundation at all from their parents' house, fasting has simply been abolished and no longer exists. It is only Satan who puts the fast out in front of Holy Communion. "So you ate oil yesterday. Did that wound the Lord? If I ate oil yesterday, then I can't receive communion. I don't know then whether what I'm saying to you now is falling on deaf ears." I would very much like to believe that people fast, but they do not fast rightly, you will ask me. In terms of the food, no. Basil the Great says, "The good is not good if it is not done well." A person fasts, for example, as I told you one evening, a light-hearted story out there, and I will repeat it for those who have not heard it. He fasts, for instance, from oil, but he does not fast with his eyes. He fasts from oil, but he does not fast in the flesh. He fasts from oil, but he does not fast with his tongue. He fasts from oil, but he does not fast from the law courts. He does not fast from lies. He does not fast from envy. And 1,002 other things. These are not fasts. They are simply going without food. Both are needed because the human person has a twofold nature. We are body and soul together. Both of them have to fast so that the fast will bear good fruit. Let me read you a passage. What I'm about to tell you are the views of the fathers and of our church. Just listen to what it says. Our church says, for example, "My soul, you fast from foods, that is, my soul, since you are fasting from food. Yet you are not cleansed of the passions. You are not being purified from the passions. You are not clean. In vain do you rejoice in your going without food. In vain, it says, do you not eat? For if it does not become for you an occasion for correction, you are hated by God as a liar, and you become like the most wicked demons, who never eat at all. You are like the devil, it says, who never touches oil, but never changes his mind either." And there are many people who come straight from the courtroom, where they have even told lies, and then they eat oil-free food or bean soup, because it is Wednesday, or because it is Great Lent. These two things have to be woven together, fasting from food and fasting of the soul. There is another counsel on this same point, and it goes like this: "As we fast with the body, brethren, let us also fast in spirit. Let us loose every bond of injustice, whatever quarrels we have. Let us settle them all and forgive them. Let us tear up every unjust contract. Let us give bread to the hungry, that we may receive from Christ our God the great mercy. If on the one hand we are fasting from oil, but on the other hand, we are not fasting from the passions, and from all the rest of it, the lawsuits, the malice, then nothing comes of it. Divine Christ says it this way, not abstinence from foods only, but abstinence from sins as well. Both are needed. If a person is willing, because there are many who say that they do not eat, they fast, they do not break the fast. But I do not know whether they also fast from sin, whether they also fast from the work of those five yoke of oxen that Christ's parable speaks of, which are also the five senses of a person. People fast, they sit down at a table with no oil on it, and then they sit for 3 or 4 hours and do not fast with their eyes, watching TV and 1,000 other cases like it. On a fast day, we talk on the telephone for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, talking at the expense of this one and that one and the next one, about some woman who has gone astray, about someone else, I do not know what. And at the same time, we are of the opinion that we are keeping the fast, and we are even preparing to receive Holy Communion. I do not know whether these people would say, I am right, this is how I see it, and this is how it is. So both must be done, because many of us have got this badly tangled. And I told you the other evening, and it caused some laughter, what happened in the Manny, where a man went out to kill someone, and he ordered his wife that if he had not come back by midday, she was to bring him food out at a crossroads, at a big mastic bush where he was hiding. God gave light, and the man he was waiting for did not pass by at midday to be killed. So she brought this fellow his food, and when he opened it up to eat and she was gathering her things to leave again and let him go on waiting, he stands up and gives her a blow on the head. She says, why are you hitting me? He says, what day is it today? She says, Wednesday. Why did you put oil in the beans? And she says to him, you've set out on purpose to go and kill a man, and you're asking me why I put oil in the beans. That's one thing, he says. And this is another. We have plenty of people like that. It isn't only that man there. There are many like him. But one day we will give an account. God has not made a mistake. It is not God's intention to send us to the sanatorium. It's other things that will send us to the sanatorium. Of course, the young lady who has been round every dance hall and never came home needs to eat. She needs to eat, because otherwise she'll collapse and end up in the sanatorium. When she comes in to you in the morning from the dance, of course she needs to eat. Otherwise, they say, she will become consumptive. The causes are elsewhere. The young man, too, who is out all night on overtime, wants to eat in the morning a beaten egg and this and that, because otherwise he will end up in the sanatorium. It is sin that does the damage. Fasting is not to blame. Fasting is a beautiful and lovely thing, and it helps the body a great deal. And those who eat less take in more nourishment for the mind. Not tutoring schools, do whatever you like. As long as the children do not fast, their minds take in nothing. Because when a child is stuffed with food, he has his teacher there giving the lesson, and he is looking at her, and his feet are going like a typewriter because he is waiting for the moment to bolt outside. He may stay sitting there, but his whole self is carried away. Of course, today, as you know, all the refrigerators are full, because some people say that the servant of God fasts only because he has nothing to eat. We who have plenty to eat, why should we fast? Besides, as I told you yesterday, God did not give us all these things simply so that we could eat them. He did not give them to us just to look at either. Let us not play games like that, because you know the Lord does not often take us by the ear, but sometimes He does take us by the ear. This was one of the ideas that came up in the early days and was passed around in the world as if it were clever. And the rich who had their means would say that these things are for the poor, the wretched people who have nothing to eat, and they found the fast. And they tell you, that is what the fast is there for, so that the poor may be consoled. We have food, so let us eat. And that is exactly what happens today. Fasting is not known in the home. The household does not know what fasting is. Woe to the person who does not bring fasting into his house. Fasting must have a special place in the home. I remember as far back as I can remember my father, who died when I was 11 years old. that there was a discussion in our house about the three F's. I couldn't make out what it meant. But afterwards, my mother explained to me what those three F's were, the three that had to do with the household. They were faqih, the lentils, fasalia, the beans, and fava, the split peas. Do things like that ever come into the house nowadays? How would they ever find their way into a house today? Who eats legumes today? So then, did God make a mistake when He created them? Did nobody know anything back then? Had science not yet advanced? Had He made a mistake? Wretched people, wretched people. You know that beans take the place of meat in every respect, without toxins, without toxins? I'm going to read you a series of articles that appeared long ago in my magazine Zoe, Life, which proves scientifically the value of legumes. So here's a woman today who's anemic, and she's going for injections, and she won't eat lentils, which are full of iron. Oh no, our house couldn't possibly bring legumes inside. Is such a thing possible? Whatever God has made, He will have made it suited to the human body. And I remember that the three F's were at work in our house on Monday, the first F, because we kept three fast days, not two, as they fast on the Holy Mountain. On the Holy Mountain, they do not fast only Wednesday and Friday. They fast Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, one meal in the afternoon. In the morning, when the church service ends at 7 or 7:30, they go and lie down. They get up for their work, and in the afternoon, after Vespers, they will have one plain meal without oil. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The Monday is not obligatory. Certain people, of course, as most of you will know, stand on what Christ said. Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees. And this is exactly why. Because the scribes and the Pharisees fasted twice a week, on Monday and on Thursday, since it was on a Thursday that Moses went up the mountain to receive the tablets and on a Monday that he came down. We added Monday on the basis of that. So our righteousness must exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. One day, Monday, for example, we would eat lentils, the next day beans, and the day after that, fava. But today such things no longer exist. Just let another occupation come, and you will see what happens. When the occupation came, the illnesses stopped. There was no high blood pressure, stomach trouble, duodenal problems, ulcers, everyone got well. Hearts got well, who did that? Kale and going without food. But ever since the air raid sirens stopped and the refrigerators filled up again, there aren't enough hospitals to put the sick in. If you counted all the sick who are still up and about, and the ones lying at home, the houses themselves would have to be turned into clinics. So many people are ill today because of gorging themselves. I myself, at this very hour, am carrying 7 illnesses on account of the diabetes, and that is on top of everything else, and 35 illnesses begin from diabetes. I already have 7 of them. Where did I get them from? From food. I did not take care of my life. I ruined my pancreas, and now nothing can be done. God is not to blame. God told me what to do. He had given me good sense, and He had given me a belt as well, but I chose to wear suspenders and I took the belt off. God is not to blame. We are the ones to blame. So we ought to take all this seriously to heart, prompted, of course, by today's occasion. And I would like to say a word about what I mentioned earlier, that sometimes God takes us by the ears. God does not forget. He is good, but He does also take us by the ears. Now, the Divine Chrysostom says something beautiful about this, and I would like to pass it on to you. And he says it about those rich people who are of the opinion that fasting, as I told you, is for the poor. Listen to what he says. Are you rich? Do not insult the fast by refusing to have it at your table. Off with you, you have no place at my table because I am rich. Do not do that, nor send it away from your house dishonored. You will not honor it. Honor it within the limits of your strength, whatever you can manage. You may not be able to set it in the center, but put it somewhere in the house all the same. Let the fast come in since it is Wednesday, since it is Friday, since it is Lent. Let the fast into the house. It is a great blessing. Nor send it away from your house dishonored. You will not honor it. Pushed aside by your pleasures. Whatever I eat, I cannot eat food without oil. I cannot eat the fruit. I cannot eat the legumes. The pleasures defeat you, and you say to the fast, out with you, lady fast. Why? That is to say, in case it goes away with a complaint and denounces you before the lawgiver of the fasts. Because is there someone who legislates these things? Human beings did not make them. Whatever is in the church, no man made it. The Spirit of God made it. Nothing has ever entered the church that did not receive the signature of the Holy Spirit. Be careful, he says. Do not drive the fast away. Hold on to it, lest it denounce you before the lawgiver of the fasts. And then what happens? Lest it multiply your condemnation and bring poverty upon you. Lest he take your money away, he says, and you become poor. And then what will happen? You will be forced to fast whether you like it or not, because it counts for nothing. Today you have a couple of coins, and who says you will have them tomorrow? There is nothing more counterfeit than money, nothing more unstable than wealth, nothing at all. So watch out, he says, lest poverty become for you an occasion of greed and of condemnation. And what will happen then? And there is still more. Either because of bodily illness or because of some other distressing circumstance. Think of people who have plenty to eat, and not only they but 40 villages around them, and all they are allowed is a little cup of milk or a small yogurt. They are not permitted to eat anything else. They look at everything from a distance. You know, people who have illnesses that clash with one another. They have diabetes, for example, which wants you eating meat day and night. And at the same time, they have, what do we call that other one that wants zucchini, the one in the blood? Urea, where you have to eat zucchini? Because they work against each other. And when you look at them, you do not know where to stand. And I have a friend who has now landed in exactly this trouble, who, when we used to discuss these things, would say to me, do not make fun of me. It was the second Sunday of the fast, and he said, I do not eat liver, not me. And mind you, it was as though heaven stood open and heard him. And now he has both of those illnesses, and he has been wasting away for 18 years. And he has plenty to eat, I do not know, 200,000 or 300,000 drachmas a month in income from rents. He could afford to eat the very veil of the temple, and he cannot eat a thing. He looks at it all from a distance. This is God. God is just, but unfortunately we do not pay attention to these things. That is exactly why today, on this occasion, on this fast, which he himself proclaimed and lived out, I wanted us to hold up this virtue and set it before ourselves. Let me tell you one more comforting thing about this. Basil the Great, speaking about fasting, was a man who himself ate barley bread. He would not even satisfy his taste with wheat bread. And as you know, he clashed with Julian the Apostate, who, when he passed through there and asked him for bread, was sent barley loaves, and he thought they had been sent to insult him, so Julian turned round and sent him 2 bales of hay. This man is an animal, he meant, this Basil the Great. He is fit to eat barley, not I. And Basil the Great gave him a beautiful answer then. Each man sends what he himself eats. You send hay. I was eating barley, so barley is what I give you. So this man who fasted himself, he is not saying it for others, he fasted himself. Do you know what he says? There are angels in every church registering those who fast. In the church you belong to, there's an angel who writes your name down on the list whenever you fast. So don't trade that away for a little pleasure in the mouth here, because the whole of it lasts only until it goes down. It's here, on the tongue, in the taste. Once it goes down, that's the end of it. You ate greens, you ate meat, you ate nightingale tongues, you filled yourself up, and past that point there is nothing left of it at all. There are angels in every church who write down the names of those who fast. Take care, watch yourself, that for a small pleasure of food you do not lose your entry in the angels' register, and make yourself liable to a charge of desertion before the one who enlisted you. He regards you, he says, as a deserter, because although you were enlisted to be a soldier of Christ, you are not living according to the commandments that have been given. In the little time I have left before bringing this hour to a close, let me explain which fasts the faithful are called to observe, as far as they are able and under the guidance of a discerning spiritual father. First, there are all the Wednesdays and Fridays of the year, 52 and 52, except during 2 weeks, Bright Week, and the week after Pentecost. Bright Week is counted as a single day, the day that bears the name above all, Pascha. That is also why there is a special canon, the 64th canon of the Sixth Ecumenical Council, which permits Holy Communion daily, on every one of the days of Bright Week. This very same thing happens after Pentecost as well, because the Holy Spirit is equal in honor with our Lord Jesus Christ. Then too we have what we call absolute days, days completely free of any fasting rule, and we may even eat meat without it being a sin. Now there is fasting, there is relaxation of the fast, and there is a full breaking of the fast. A release means we eat from everything. A relaxation means we eat without the usual restrictions. And fasting is when we do not eat. No food. The word itself is a compound. No food. Wednesday and Friday, for the one who is able, are kept as a complete fast until 3 in the afternoon. The man who goes off to work will keep it in his own way, another in his. Each person has his own manner. The same hat that fits me does not fit somebody else. Each person has his own particular way of fasting, in proportion to his constitution, in proportion to his work. There must be discernment and guidance, and I say it again from a discerning spiritual father. Therefore, we fast on every Wednesday and Friday. There are certain Wednesdays and Fridays when the feast of the holy apostles, Peter and Paul, may fall, not the feast of the 12 apostles, but that of Peter and Paul, and on those days fish is permitted. The 15th of August, the feast of Our Lady the Theotokos, may fall on a Wednesday or a Friday, fish is allowed, and on the 15th of August, if it falls on a Wednesday or a Friday, meat is not allowed, fish is allowed. The same goes for the honorable forerunner, apart from the beheading of his honorable head, on his synaxis and on his nativity, fish is allowed. There are also certain Wednesdays and Fridays on which oil is allowed, and we find this in the horologion, the great horologion, which ought to be in our homes if we are Christians. From it we see the days on which there are saints celebrated with a doxology, Saint Nicholas, Saint Spyridon, other saints, and it says wine and oil are allowed. It is presupposed that there is a divine liturgy. It is presupposed that you will go to church to take part in the liturgy and to receive Holy Communion. And then wine and oil are allowed to you. The rest, if it is possible, are a complete fast. Then we have what is called the Great Lent, which is not in fact a 40 days, it is a 50 days. Great Lent begins on Clean Monday and ends on Lazarus Saturday. Those are the 40 days that our Christ fasted, which we read about in the 4th chapter of Matthew and the 4th chapter of Luke on the mountain of the 40 days. After that begins Holy Week, or the week of the Passion. The week is called great, not because it is longer in hours, but because it is greater in the events it holds. Apart from Great Lent itself, Holy Week is kept without oil, except on the Saturday and the Sunday. And again I say, there are exceptions. Then we have the 40-day fast, from the 14th of November, the Feast of St. Philip, until the 25th of December. People have adjusted this one to suit themselves. Some fast until the 21st of the month so as to receive Holy Communion at the entry of the Theotokos into the temple, and from then on they begin eating again until the Feast of St. Spyridon, and then they start fasting again so as to receive communion later on. Others eat fish every day, including Wednesday and Friday. Others eat fish only on Saturday and Sunday. People have cut it to their own measure. Properly speaking, from what we read, we find that there is no such distinction. A person is always called to approach Holy Communion, and fish is allowed only on Saturday and Sunday. You don't have any other days for it. The same holds for the fast of the Holy Apostles, which is kept in exactly the same way. Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, oil. Wednesday and Friday, no oil. Saturday and Sunday, fish. That is the rule for the fast of August 15th of August as well, and for the 40-day. The 40-day fast is kept in a certain sense on the pattern of the fast of Moses, who fasted 40 days and 40 nights in order to receive the Word of God upon tablets of stone, and he received it. We too fast those 40 days in order to receive the Word of God made flesh from the Most Holy Theotokos and Virgin. There is also the fast of the August 15th of August, which is in fact two fasts, one for the Transfiguration and the other for the Theotokos, but joined together the two of them make up the August fast for us, because we begin on the first of the month, on the sixth of the month fish is allowed, and then it resumes and it ends on the 14th, on the eve of the feast. This fast is a strict one too, like that of Great Lent. There is the fast we keep today, on the beheading of the honored head of the forerunner. There is the fast on the eve of the Feast of Lights, for Theophany, when we cleanse ourselves so as to rise spiritually the next day and meet the Holy Trinity. And there is the fast of September 14th, on the exaltation of the honored and life-giving cross, because on that day we call to mind the events of Great Friday, and indeed the Gospel readings appointed for Great Friday are read. That is fasting, seen from every angle. The hardest, I say again, is the fast of Wednesday and Friday. So too are the fast of Great Lent and that of the 15th of August. A person is called to step inside this framework as well, and to struggle within the limits of his own strength. As for us, with no guide at all, going only by our stomach and nothing else, we carry on doing what we do. Of course, some funny things get said about all this. As I told you earlier, there are people who fast on Wednesday and Friday and have made a vow to do it, since they're obliged to fast anyway. But there are some other things too, supposedly reasonable arguments. Take that Sunday, the Sunday in Cheese Fair week, the week that runs from Meat Fair to Cheese Fair. This week is not called the last carnival, Meat Fair. The carnival of meat has already come and gone. It is called Cheese Fair week, and that Sunday, the last one, the one we here call the last carnival Sunday, the day when we get up to all our madness, its real name is Cheese Fair Sunday. It suits Satan that we should not learn what is commemorated on that day, because on that day Adam and Eve were cast out of paradise, the most terrible day the world has known. That is why he has dressed it up with carnivals and with our own filth, so that nobody understands anything, so that the whole thing slips by unnoticed. During that week, the Church permits only fish and dairy and forbids meat. She does exactly what God did in Eden. Everything is yours, he tells them, but not this one thing. And here she says the same. Everything is yours. Butter, cheese, milk, eggs, fish, salt, cod, meat. No. And notice this. The man who was cast out of paradise, the one whose expulsion we commemorate on that Sunday, was cast out because he ate from the one thing that was forbidden him. So you too, if you eat meat during that week of Cheese Fair, you're sinning in the very same way Adam and Eve sinned. What has been vowed stays vowed. What is set apart to God remains set apart. And now along comes the clever fellow, the know-it-all, and he says to you, come now. These things are ridiculous, you poor souls. You eat the eggs, but you won't eat the hen that lays the eggs. They are mocking us. And it happened to me. My wife is here. It happened to me. I was at Psychico and a doctor friend of ours came, and it was that very week. My wife from her bed, I do not remember what was wrong with her, said Demetrius. Will you not keep the doctor here? Give him something to eat. I said to her, if the doctor will eat what I am going to eat, let him sit down and we will eat together. If the doctor will not eat what I am going to eat, I am not going to give in and prepare anything else for the doctor. But my dear man, he says to me, am I to eat the eggs and not eat the hen? He said that to me because it was Cheese Fair week. Now I had to enlighten him, so I let it go. A little time passed, and then I came at him from the side. Tell me, doctor, I say, I forgot to ask you, if my wife picks up a little, can I take a hen and make her some broth? Oh, come on, Dmitri, not a hen, he said. Not right away. The moment she gets back on her feet, then what should I get, I asked? A scrawny little chicken to make a light thin soup, something she can begin to take little by little. So, doctor, I said, there is a distinction between a hen and a young chicken. Of course there is, he said. And is there no distinction between a hen and an egg? Then what did he understand? The point is not that the hen is sick while I'm eating the egg of a healthy hen. If I eat a hen and cook it up with butter and little potatoes and roast it nicely, well, we reach 2,500 calories. You know that if you eat 2 eggs, you take on 180 calories. The aim is to put less fuel inside you. That is the reason. So then you understood, that's where you're going with this, he says to me. That's exactly where I'm going with it, I tell him. I'm simply pointing it out to you. And let me tell you the rest of it as well. How is it that I eat taramas, the salted fish roe, and yet I don't eat the fish that the roe comes from? Or how do I eat the olive and not eat the oil the olive gives? Both of them serve the same purpose. If I eat bread and an olive, I have kept xerophagy, dry eating bread, and an olive. But if I allow the oil, then I will eat potatoes with oil, broad beans with oil, this with oil, that with oil. Wonderful things. And do you know what that means? A good bean soup, with a nice generous splash of oil, with a little carafe of wine, and he polished off a whole twisty loaf of bread. What do you want the steak for, if you never keep a fast at all? Fasting is eating bread and taramas, fish roe spread, you put a little on top. You make yourself a sandwich, and you eat it. That's the whole point, to cut back your calories, to bring you down, to bring you back down to earth. That's why the church takes meat away during Cheese Fair Week, to bring a person back down to earth. She leaves him with dairy so that she can land him smoothly into the fast on Clean Monday. She is a wrong mother, this one we call the church, and we turn our backs on her when she has laid down her laws for our own good and cares for us for our own good. But we, rebellious and mindless, do what we do, and we have filled the sanatoriums and all the neurological clinics and all the houses of corruption. Because do you want the brothels to close down? 1 3-day fast and every one of those beds goes empty. Do you want the adulterers and the fornicators to stop? 1 3-day fast and the whole thing collapses. The whole problem is solved. The finest cuts of meat are all consumed in those dens of vice. They feed themselves so they will have the strength to keep up with their debauchery. This is what the sober, God-given fast can do, and sadly we too have bartered it away and sold it off cheap. We will understand this when we die, but by then it will be too late. I thought that since today we happen to honor one of these great men of fasting, one who left us this very lesson, these things too could be said tonight. May God be our helper.